Birds on the airwaves. It's Big Dog Balta.
Let's go Falcons.
Crossover. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some interesting animals that could be very similar to the flying monkeys for the Wizard of Oz. It's Big Dog Balta. My name is Jordan Fogle.
From Wicked. Takes the you end up play. Seeing Wicked?
Fuck that. Okay.
It's a great movie.
There's a good
man.
Discussion to
great
have before
movie.
We get into the NBA. No, no. You're...
Great film.
You're like a quasi-theater kid. So that yeah, counts. Yeah. I get you. If it's for you. It's for you and your twisted loser, friend group and all these other like lame-os that want to go out there and sing songs while you're at a movie theater. I come from a generation, Jordan, where we sit there, we eat our popcorn, and we shut the hell up. And
what generation is that?
The golden generation.
The 98s?
Yes, yeah.
Or no, are you 99? Well, no, you're 98.
I'm 98, man. Come on, show some respect. I would never be a 99.
That'd be embarrassing.
But that whole lead up to that campaign, first off, thoughts and prayers to Ariana Grande, because obviously something's fucking going on there. My God, she was always pretty skinny, but that there's something up. I don't want this to be another Chadwick Boseman situation where people roast
them. Exactly.
And it turns out that it's crazy. So thoughts and prayers. But as a whole, don't care for any of the music. Don't give a shit. I kept thinking, I'm not hip anymore. I'm not with the kids. Chapel Roan, that Pink Pony Club song, I thought was from Wicked. I kept hearing clips of it, and I thought that was on Wicked. I don't know, man. It sounds like a musical number.
Man. You know how they say, sexuality is a spectrum, Matt? You're all the way. You got no gay in you at all, which is a shame because it's fun to have a little bit.
To be gay?
Yeah.
Is this your coming out party?
We're here for it, man. On the spectrum, okay? The cultural spectrum of gayness, which means I enjoy Wicked. What else is gay about me?
Pedicures.
I've never actually had a pedicure.
Good. But, they probably charge you double to be touching those fucking arms for toes you got.
You're right. No, Wicked's a great film. I won't take this slander from you, Matt. You need to see it on Broadway. That's what we need to do. We need to do a trip to the Big Apple. You'll get swept up in it, man. You'll be a there's a name for them. They're called something. Wicked Files or I don't know. But you'll become one. Trust me.
Wicked Files. For the record, I've never really gone to many musicals in my life. I did see a musical production of Tarzan years ago because shout out to Scotty D, the backflip king.
Oh, yes.
He played the freaking dad gorilla. That was hilarious. Decent production, Owen Sound, local thing. I'll say this. I will never, ever, ever have any ambition to go to a musical. I went to that one I told you guys all about on the cruise that had a night where they did that's just a bunch of hits and like half of them I hated. But yes. I will say this, I 110% will go one day. We will all go and see that Chess musical for one night in Bangkok.
Yes. Great, great fucking song. Yeah. I forget what's that. It's called, I think it might literally be called Chess.
I think it is.
Something like that. Something very on the nose. Yeah, great. There's got a musical about everything these days. Definitely that's on the list for sure.
And also, we were talking about being on the spectrum. Have you partaken in the new season of Love on the Spectrum, Jordan? Because now that is real TV. That is real entertainment, unlike Broadway musicals. These guys, they are out there putting themselves on the line, being vulnerable, man. And someone with an autistic brother, I can appreciate the awkwardness and also just the drama that each autistic person seems to have. They are the most dramatic people on the planet.
Love it. Yeah. I've never seen a single episode of that show. I just haven't gotten around to it. But I've seen the clips on Reels and TikToks and stuff. It looks just like the best. So yes, I need to, that's another thing on my list, a piece of entertainment on my list. But the other thing I've been seeing is the one girl with Tourette's. Have you seen the blonde girl with Tourette's? They've got a show about her that is really sort of de-stigmatizing it. She's got a twin sister.
They
look exactly the same. That one also looks quite entertaining for obvious reasons. Love Tourette's. Love it.
Yeah, I love Tourette's. And also, as much as I will continue to fat shame people, especially the massively overweight, I do a guilty pleasure of mine.
Canceled.
Yeah, well, that's okay. We've been trying. Yeah, someone needs to put an end to this at some point here. But my guilty pleasure watch, I don't know if you ever watched it, Jordan, My 600-Pound Life, and they get that little doctor. I've watched so many episodes, man. They get that little doctor. Okay, you need to lose some weight. And he's like fucking 5'2", this little, like, I don't even know what where he's from. He's like the most unique accent I've ever heard in my life. And he's just savage to them. Like, they're like, well, I just can't. I only ate 5 Dunkaroos before coming here. And then he's like, well, that is not healthy. You're going to die. And then they fucking break down. And he's like, okay, talk to me when you take it seriously. And he walks out. I'm like, that guy is hilarious. Savage. And he's like the top of the profession, man. My 600-Pound Life is probably my guilty pleasure. All those, what network's that all on? It's like the 90 Day Fiance and all that shit. Yeah, it's all the worst.
Something LN or something. I forget. Or TLC. Is it TLC?
Yeah, TLC sounds right. Shout out to, you said OLN though. Wasn't that the outdoor TV channel here in Canada at one point?
I don't know. Your dad would know. He's in all the pulses with that.
He doesn't know shit. But let's stop talking about Broadway, autism, fatties, and Ariana Grande. Let's talk about the NBA. First off, Jordan, we haven't had one in quite a while, especially not a legitimate one between, you know, two playoff contending teams. We had a buzzer beater, baby. Ja Morant,
yes,
shooting the lights out. No pun intended. Maybe it was a little bit. But Ja Morant hitting the buzzer beater against the Miami Heat. Great game. Obviously, we've talked about the Grizzlies, and they're kind of wild last 2 weeks to the season. Obviously, you know, firing Taylor Jenkins was a huge surprise. Not much of a surprise to us. I'll give you credit, Jordan. You called it that this was somewhat of a disgruntled employee's decision named Ja Morant, that he wasn't happy with the way the offense was run over there in Memphis. And, you know, now he's coming out, he's balling. He's had some great games, some competitive matchups, even though, you know, the Timberwolves still are kind of dropping through the standings. They are actually almost, they're tied right now with the Timberwolves. They have the tiebreaker, though, as of recording this on Friday afternoon. They could drop into the play-in tournament as a real possibility. So this was a huge shot for them to make, or else they'd be looking at having to play themselves into the playoffs instead of just having a guaranteed top six spot, which is what they've held for pretty much the entire year.
Yep.
Crazy to think that at one point they were the number one or the number two team in the Western Conference for like a month. And, you know, here we are now with them, you know, on the outside looking in potentially of the top six.
Can you actually believe the Warriors are ahead of them in the standing? Like, what
it's yeah. More
imagine if before the Jimmy Butler trade, if someone told us that, like, it's just crazy. It's wild.
But it was I think that Ja Morant, like, we do have to start having that conversation too, that he is one of the most clutch players in the league. He's hit a lot of really tough shots to win games throughout his short NBA career. And the thing I really like about it, and I can appreciate, is none of them are like, he doesn't settle for these like pull up middies or just you know, random threes. Like, he just gets the ball, call the ISO, and he drives it into the paint. Like, 99% of his, you know, big shots in the clutch are just taking it at the rack, using his crazy athleticism and, you know, making something finish. I love the move, the little drop your shoulder, hit the step back, and then you get the friendly shooter's roll at the rim. Perfect shot, perfect opportunity. The Heat continue to falter, even though the Eastern Conference playoff race is officially locked up. RIP to the Raptors season,
yep.
as the Bulls have captured that last play-in spot. Not a surprise to anybody, really, though. Overall, Jordan, I mean, as we're looking at the Grizzlies and they're fighting to stay afloat in this jam-packed Western Conference, you know, how do you feel about them and Ja Morant and his antics? Because, you know, he's also coming off of a $75,000 fine against the Warriors after, you know, flashing the piece at Buddy Hield. But yeah, and Buddy Hield was also sending that one back over at him. And it's kind of become a thing, you know. Is Ja Morant worth all the headaches? We've had a lot of Ja Morant trade discussions in the past as well, and I think that that's never been more prevalent than it will be this offseason.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Jenkins firing kind of is what has kind of propelled this conversation, because we talked about it. There had to be a reason, and you know, there was the stuff that came out that his whole freaking the front office got rid of all of his assistants over the summer, and it was just a sort of new system they were trying to implement, way fewer ball screens, more of this sort of free-flowing offense that was more democratic, you know, all this stuff, which we I wasn't as locked in on or knew about till I, you know, saw all that reporting that came out after that. But yeah, definitely it clearly had something to do with Jaw and not being happy within that system. And I said right away that that's be careful going down that road if you're going to say, okay, we have this coach who has been really successful for us, helped us get places we haven't been, you know, almost ever in or at least since those, you know, the Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, Marc Gasol days. So siding with Jaw, if that's what it was about, I was like, well, okay, be kind of maybe I would be a little bit weary about that. But I also sort of understand it because you have to keep your star player happy, and he still is your star player. Like you said, that shot was incredible. That was a really tough one over Khalil Ware. He's huge. Mm-hmm. Again, he tried to get into the paint, kind of was walled off, and to be able to have the poise to get that ball high enough, a little fadeaway. He is super clutch, super dynamic. And maybe the freaking argument for firing Taylor Jenkins is like, maybe you're going to sort of wake all these guys up, Jaw included, to the fact that like, this is serious. Our slide down the Western Conference really made it so we had to make this crazy decision that we've basically never seen, which is a team in the position they're in firing their coach so close to the playoffs. But like, all the issues I've been talking about with the Grizzlies still remain, and we've talked about them a lot over the last couple of weeks. Like, I think they are destined for the play-in tournament. Like, with the way the Timberwolves have been playing, the Clippers are still playing well. There's just a game back in the win column. Like, I think the Grizzlies are the ones with the sort of sliding momentum, and even the fact that Jaw had to go hit that shot against the Heat. Like, you should be taking care of the Heat. The Heat have been pretty bad. I know they were bad after the Jimmy trade, and then they've gotten a lot better. But still, I would put the Grizzlies on you know, a couple tiers above them if you're really trying to win these games to close out the season. And like, you know, their closing lineup in that game was Jaw and Scottie Pippen Jr. in the backcourt. You had Santi Aldama out there, and then Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. That's solid. Like, we've talked about it before. We like their big three, Jaw, Bane, and Triple J. They work well together. But like, again, as much as I love Scottie Pippen, I love Santi Aldama, to me, on a really good team, those guys are bench guys who come in and provide that energy you know, are kind of additive to your starting unit. I think they're at this point with the Brandon Clark injury and with sort of the guys that they have, this really deep bench that, you know, in the regular season, like 12 different guys play 18 plus minutes per game or something like that. Going into the playoffs, like, I still don't really see them as a true contending threat. I just don't think, I think they're a piece or two away from that, you know, inserted into that starting lineup. And again, I keep identifying this missing wing player that hasn't been there since Dylan Brooks was there. And I know Dylan Brooks, again, was an imperfect version of that, but at least he was that. Like, I don't think you can just rely on a Luke Kennard to fully fill that big wing role, or a guy like Jalen Wells, who's been great, but he's a rookie. I don't think you can fully rely on him right away either. So like, I still think all those issues still remain, and I still don't give the Grizzlies that big of a chance. Like, if you think about it, going into the if they're in the play-in in the 7 or 8 game, they could lose that game, and then they could
100%.
And then, you know, I don't see them losing to the Mavericks or the Kings or the Suns, if that's who ends up making it sort of in that second game, if they lose the first one. But then you lose that first one, then you're in the 8th seed. And then again, you're playing the Thunder. Like, you're not, I'm not giving you any chance to beat the Thunder. There is obviously, everyone in the West is looking at that second spot that the Rockets are holding right now, and looks like, you know, they should be able to hold on to that with the lead that they have over everyone from 3 on down. There is, the Rockets are clearly vulnerable, and everyone knows it, because they're not that tested. They don't have really a go-to scorer. They're still pretty young, and the offense just isn't at the level that their defense is at. But even in that, if they've got home court, I think they can beat the Grizzlies, just the way that both teams have been playing more recently. So I've just
definitely more cohesive unit compared to the Grizz.
Yeah. And you know, the Grizzlies, again, they're solid. They're a solid team. They're a great regular season team. I'll always give them that credit. But I think you're relying a lot on, you're going to be relying a lot on Ja Morant heroics in the playoffs. And if you think about the Ja Morant mixtape, the highlight tape, most of his big plays are during the regular season. That's not to say he hasn't played well in the playoffs at times, but he's a way easier guy to game plan against in the playoffs because it's a half court game. It slows down. Ja still doesn't really have that half court signature move that he can go to and go and get. And it's just harder for point guards to be that go-to scorer, which he is for this team. So, yeah, I don't think the outlook has really changed. I'm in hindsight now when we're talking about like what they did with the coaching change. It's making more and more sense as we go on with sort of that context of Taylor Jenkins kind of already being on the hot seat, which I honestly didn't fully realize. Like there's people in Memphis being like, yeah, if they lost in the first round or even if they didn't, like depending on what happened, he was for sure being fired in the summer. And I was like, whoa, I didn't know he was. Was his job was so up for grabs. So there was some things going on there that was not super obvious to, I think, like the national watchers. That's interesting. So that that sort of makes more sense why they made that move, but it still is going to cut off, I think, what their ceiling would have been if they just kept him and let him coach out through the playoffs this year and then see what happens. So we'll see, but certainly to me the Grizzlies are still, despite that win, kind of fading with momentum, and I don't think they're making it out of the first round. I could be wrong depending on the matchups. It would have to be the Rockets. But even then, I don't give them much of a chance.
Yeah, I think we make this comparison a lot to just teams that do really well in the regular season but never actually do anything in the playoffs. But they are very 2015 Hawks coded. This is how this Grizzlies team has been in the Ja Morant era. 50 plus wins, every season, and they look great in the regular season. They have good moments, but then playoffs come and they just don't. Like, my biggest thing is, if you're going to win the title, you have to have at least a lineup or a star player that strikes fear into someone's heart. Like, when you know that your team is going to be playing them, that you're like, okay, we got to watch out for that guy. I don't think they've got a guy like that. They've got good players, but they don't have like a superstar. And I thought Ja Morant was going to be, one of the best players in the NBA for several years to come. His third season in the NBA, he was averaging 27 points, 5 rebounds, and 6.7 assists a game. That's amazing. Great ability overall on the court, solid defense as well. It was averaging over a steal a game, shot the ball efficiently from the floor. But the problem with him is that since that season, he has just continued to get worse. Like, he's averaging his least amount of points in a season since that year, his third year. Yep. He's now in year 6 of his career. Obviously, he only played 9 games last year, but even in that short span, he was still trickling downwards from what he was averaging, the couple seasons prior to that. And then one of the biggest concerns, like, we all know he's a great athlete, but to what you were saying about game planning for him, I mean, in the modern NBA, you can't win without having a point guard that can at least shoot the three and make people, have to sag on him. Like, this is like Ben Simmons-itis. Like, if you are not able to shoot the three ball, you can't play the point guard. Like, everybody will drop on you, and then even if you're super athletic, you can drive to the rim, but they're going to be in position to play you. They're going to be in position to take a charge or contest your shot or feed you into the wolves inside. It's just not going to work. Ja Morant is shooting 30% from three this season. That's horrible. That is bad for a lead point guard on what's supposed to be a potential contending team in the playoffs. And he shoots 5 a game. Like, it's not like this is just 30%. He's shooting 1 or 2. He's shooting 5 3-pointers a game. So that's way too high of a volume to be shooting that badly. He's still a really solid playmaker, but overall, I genuinely, at this point in his career, talking about all these headaches and immaturities that he's shown throughout his career, like, I do think that if there's ever been a time to draw a line in the sand and say, you know what, maybe we are better off trying to get some assets for him and building around Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane, because they are a lot more traditional. They fit into a lot better. They fit a lot better into a majority of schemes. Whereas Ja Morant, you really have to plan everything around him and his play style. And at this point, I think the only reason that you would do that is if you believe that they are going to be a superstar player that can take you to the playoffs or at least deep into the playoffs, or the NBA Finals. And I don't think that's Ja Morant anymore. I think that we've kind of seen the extent of his career, and he's still got a lot of potential, and he's still young. He can prove me wrong, but this season has just been super uninspiring for me to watch, and I just don't know if he gets any better than what we've seen.
Yeah, yeah, and that's yet to be seen. I agree. And like, even this is a small thing too, but like, to the sort of off court and apart from basketball reasons as to why maybe, you know, he's not reached the maturity level that you need to be at. Again, we're all speculating. None of us fucking actually know the guy, but just based on what you see, what you hear, like after, I don't know if you noticed this, after he hit that shot, he went to, first of all, his teammates seemingly didn't react to the level that maybe I thought that they would. Like, guys seemed happy, but like, normally if you hit a game winning walk off buzzer beater at this point in the season, when games are so important for you, I would have expected a bit more of a reaction from the bench. Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but like, Desmond Bane just kind of put his hands up, just kind of clapped, started walking over there. And then Jaw didn't go to his teammates or towards his bench. He went straight to the other baseline to one of his fucking boys there on the baseline. I didn't even know who that was. But
wasn't his dad there?
I don't think it was his dad. I don't think it was T, because I recognized T, but maybe I'm wrong. And that was who it was, but it just looked like one of his friends. And which is fine. Like, that's a pretty normal reaction too. But another thing you could have done is go towards your bench as they're running out, you know, onto the court. Or embraced your teammates in some way. And then when he was walking off, even after that, he was just kind of giving high fives to guys. So I'm not going to read too much into this. And maybe I already am, but it seemed a little bit like, are the guys even in that locker room a little bit maybe disconnected from him as a leader? I don't know. Like, that might be another issue as well. We'll have to see down the line when things come out, you know, depending on how far they make it this year ultimately. But I think that's another thing where you look at like a guy like Jaw and a guy like Anthony Edwards, kind of similar physical talents, you know, really tantalizing and just super dynamic, athletic young guys who have had these sort of maturity questions, at least probably Jaw to a little bit more of an extent. But it's like, Anthony Edwards has shown sort of this step up every year, like to the point last year where he was defending Cat and trying to, sort of build up his confidence so he could go out and help the team.
He's got another baby on the way, new baby mama.
Yeah, there we go. But like, he's trying to I think Ant has clearly seemingly tried to make steps and take steps to be a better leader, because that's what you do when you're given the keys to a team. Ja Morant has had the keys to the Grizzlies now for a few years. I don't really see, I can't really think of the sort of leadership qualities or things that he's shown or things that I've heard other guys say about him that sort of demonstrate that he's ready to take up that part of it too, which is just as big as sort of what you do on the court when you're the best player on a team. And I still think he's, and I mean, you can go back to his fucking interview with Jalen Rose and how he handled everything that happened last year. I think there's still a maturity question, like a huge maturity question there, that I'm not sure when or if it's going to get answered. And yeah, just based on the reactions after that buzzer beating shot, I'm like, well, okay, well, I think it's now a question mark for me, just in terms of how much control and how much respect as a leader he has in that locker room. So we'll see. I might be reading too much into something, but it's like with him, if you're going to have these sort of quote unquote flaws in your game as a playoff player, and you're going to be sort of lacking in that leadership aspect, then yeah, you're starting to ask questions like, yeah, this might be the fucking most talented guy we've ever had in this organization. But like you said, at what point do you start to think about, well, are we going to maybe be better off thinking about moving off of him? Like how many more years are you going to sort of believe in this core and give them a chance to basically just run it back? And they've had over the past few years, like excuses like, oh, we've had injuries, like, and other concerns, obviously off the court stuff as well. But for this year, for the most part, I know Brandon Clark's still not going to be out there, but for the most part, you're going to have, as long as no one else goes down, another run with a healthy team, you know, going into the playoffs against a loaded West. I think you're going to have a lot more questions answered about who this team really is by the off season. And yeah, you might see some changes over there.
Well, we're going to keep a close eye on the Memphis Grizzlies, Ja Morant, and their shaky future as we get into the postseason. But before we get into anything else, let's talk about a huge matchup that went down between legitimate title contenders. I think I might put the label on both of them. You know, one maybe is still a little bit shaky, in my opinion, but we'll get into that. But the Golden State Warriors taking the dub against the Lakers on the road, 123-116. You know, death taxes and LeBron James versus Stephen Curry masterclasses. Yep. Steph getting the better of LeBron in this duel, as he's done many, many, many times in their head-to-head career. 37 points from Steph. Trumps LeBron's 33, and this was also, you know, an awesome performance from Brandon Podziemski over there on the Warriors. 8 three-pointers, which really was the difference maker in this one. You know, Austin Reeves had 31 points to his own right, and 9 threes from 16 shots from deep, which is kind of insane volume. But they needed every single three-point shot they could get from him, because Luka Doncic goes 0-for from deep. You know, continues to have a bit of a wonky up and down LA tenure so far. You know, still almost post the triple double, but you know, very inefficient from the field in this one. And again, ultimately, the Lakers take the loss in this one, whereas the Warriors with Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler, their big offseason or their big trade deadline, pardon me, acquisition, you know, keeps doing what he does. You know, playing great versatile defense, holding it down, and you know, his stat lines definitely don't show his total impact on the game. But overall, in this one, Jordan, I mean, this is a potential, you know, playoff matchup that we could be seeing very shortly here. Right now, this would be the 4-5 matchup in the Western Conference, which would be you know, absolutely gangbusters. I mean, the league is probably salivating. Adam Silver is doing everything in his alien powers to make sure that this is manipulated and constructed so that these two teams can play in the first round, because this will be the top most watched series in the first round if it happens, by far.
Oh yeah, and I think honestly though, the league definitely wants this series to happen, but they might prefer it happening in the second round, so that might take some more finagling for Adam, but I think he's up to it. I do hope they meet at some point. I do give both of these teams, if they don't meet in the first round, I give them a good chance of advancing to that second round. Yep. Like you said, contenders, whether you want to put that tag on these guys, like, I think to me, they're both kind of on the cusp of it. Like, I'm not fully ready to commit. Even the Warriors, I know they've been super hot since the Jimmy trade, something like, I think they're like 18-2, 16-2, something like that. Like, and maybe one more win there after the Lakers won last night. But they've just been so good. I understand that, but I'm still not fully convinced that they're going to be for the rest of the season at this level that they're playing at. But you got to give them credit. They've been incredible climbing the standings to be in fifth spot now and have a real shot at maybe getting up there in the top four and actually hosting a first round playoff series is crazy.
They could get to third, man.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And you know, the Lakers could too. They're still ahead of them technically, even with that loss. Yep. And you know,
we'll see. Half game behind the Nugs.
Yeah. And the Lakers have a really tough schedule. I think they still have two OKC games, left on their schedule, but, you know, depending on whether the Thunder are going for that 70 wins, which I think they'd have to win out for the rest of the year to reach that, you know, they might be resting some guys. So, you know, there's a lot still to happen in that, you know, three down all the way to eight, honestly, in the West. But this game, I think, was really telling for both sides, because I think the Warriors, for them, Steph did his thing, and then you have the depth of that team where Draymond, you don't have to worry about his stat sheet offensively. He's just, he just does his job defensively, which he did in this one. And we're going to talk about him, I think, in more detail on that side of the ball here in a second. But like, he stripped Luka on a big play, you know, at the end of the game here that would have made it close. He was super active as always. And again, Steph can go off and have this great game, which we know he can, you know, have, especially in the playoffs. Like, we've seen what he can do, obviously. And then the Warriors are just so deep that it's like, it can be any guy on any given night. Like, fucking in this one, Jimmy didn't even have to do barely anything. Like, I think he only took seven shots.
Yeah.
And then So it was Pajemski last night who had the game of his life, but it could be, you know, Moses Moody on one of these nights. Like Jonathan mm-hmm. Kuminga, who is now back, had a great game off the bench. He can easily score 20, 25 plus. You've got Buddy Hield there as well, too, who could have a great shooting night. So I think the Warriors really showed that they've got a good collection of guys that you can sort of filter through. And if you just have one of them pop on any given night to go along with Steph's offense, then you can put up enough points, and Draymond and Jimmy are going to and their bigs are going to play good enough team defense that, like, yeah, they can beat anyone on any given night. It's on the nights when, you know, before that Butler trade, when, you know, everyone seemed cold, like Pajemski was having a god awful start to the season. Like he's really turned it around. And you just didn't have that level of offensive production when other teams would, you know, sort of clamp down on Steph, especially when Kuminga was out as well. But, mm-hmm. yeah, they've really just got a lot of guys. And then on the Lakers side, they're just so, like, I'm going to, even though this was a loss, like the positive takeaway is they have just have so much playmaking. Like genuinely every time down the fucking court, they get a good shot because they have Reeves, LeBron, and Luka just picking apart like every situation. Like they're just all such good playmakers. They're going to shoot if they're open. You know, even though Luka had a bad game here, like you said, Austin Reeves was great. LeBron was great. And they just get such great shots for guys like Rui Hachimura and Finney Smith and Gabe Vincent. But they're not as anywhere nearly as deep as the Warriors. Like they
don't. They're not as deep as the average team in the NBA. I would say right now they're playing with four starters and they're starting five. Like Jackson Hayes should not be starting on any fucking NBA team. And in this one, that's what I wanted to really point out. Like 7 points off the bench in this one. You're not going to win any basketball game 7 points off the fucking bench.
Yeah. No. Exactly. And you know that. But to be fair, that's all JJ really has to work with. Like Finney Smith. Like even playing fucking Goodwin, 14 minutes. I don't think he'd want to do that. Like you know Vanderbilt, Vincent, and Finney Smith.
Could have played Kinect. I mean, when you're in a game like this, you see a performance like that. I mean, I don't see why Jordan Goodwin's on the court instead of Kinect. Kinect at least can, you know, find ways to be versatile, create his own shot, like just be a bit of a spark plug, and I guarantee he'll shoot it more than one time. That's all Goodwin gave you in, you know, 14 minutes. Like Gabe Vincent, you know, he's over there for defense. Really, mostly the same could be said for Dorian Finney-Smith. Jared Vanderbilt honestly sucks. I don't care what Lakers fans say. He's
their only
average.
Sort of defensive player. Like offensively,
yes,
sucks, but
yeah, yeah, oh yeah, 100%. Like the defense is fine, but yeah, when you roll these four guys out though off the bench, like you have to have some kind of offensive spark plug to get things going. Yeah. Or yeah, you're gonna have more of these nights where your bench is held to under double digits, and in a game where you're putting up 116 points, you would expect to have a little bit more than that.
I know, and yeah, that's a huge problem for them. And like you're looking at it, it's like they have nowhere to go. I mean, I don't even know why. I would have thrown Shake Milton out there. I mean, you acquired him.
He's barely played. He's glued to the bench.
Yeah, but I'm like, you know, that could maybe be someone you could work into the rotation a little bit. So like, that's just their top end guys, their top three are so talented and so good. But yeah, when you look to that bench, there's just nothing. And the fact that they were even in this game when Steph had such a good game and Pajemski had such a good game just shows how good their top end talent is. And the fact that they could have had this. Like if Luka has a little bit better of a game offensively, hits a few more shots. I mean, I saw that this is his first game in like over 100, but he didn't actually hit a three. He had one of the longest streaks going, either, you know, actively in the NBA or it might've been all time hitting at least 1 3. So, you know, he has a little bit more of a normal offensive game. The Lakers could have won this one, which is the other issue with the Lakers is that like Luka is the best example of this defensively. He still gets blown by. Like anytime Luka is out there defending anyone on the position on an island, he gets blown by. Anytime he's asked to sort of cover the, inactive side of the floor when there's a pick and roll going on or something, someone will sneak back door behind him or he'll let a pass get through to the middle and then the Warriors were able to spray it around. Like it's getting to the point where like it's actually impressive how bad he is because he's such a good seer of the floor offensively. Like he makes every right read. He knows, you know, how to pass, how to get to the rim. The fact that he's so bad on defense is honestly surprising. And he still looks out of shape. He still looks like he's sort of laboring to get up and down the floor. Like that is a big problem. And you know, obviously this is always sort of the issue. Well, again, it's yet to be seen, but like the fact that this is when the Lakers kind of should be ramping up. I understand that, or at least I give Luka the benefit of the doubt that he's just, even though he's 26 or whatever he is, he's basically physically and mentally like a 35-year-old guy and is just uninterested in the regular season, you know, at this point in time, and he's going to turn it up in the playoffs. But again, that's how you have to push that aside and get yourself into shape and into sort of that rhythm of playing at that high level defensively if you want to be able to hit the ground running in the playoffs. And I think that's another reason why his conditioning is kind of shit. Like he doesn't play hard enough, or, you know, he doesn't give his all in games that he absolutely doesn't have to. So, you know, these are the classic Luka issues that the Lakers are just going to have to deal with. But I would have thought that maybe being on a new team, it would have kind of lit a fire under his ass, especially being around LeBron with we know how much he puts into keeping himself ready physically and mentally. So clearly that hasn't worn off on him yet. I'm still holding out hope here, but that's the other thing too. And I mean, defensively beyond that, Austin Reeves also will get picked on, especially when it comes down to it in the playoffs. And that's the big thing too. If you look at the Warriors' big three, there's offensive and defensive balance. Like you have Steph and Jimmy able to score, and you have Draymond and Jimmy a little bit as well, able to defend. And you look at the three for the Lakers between Reeves, Luka, and LeBron. Like there's just not nearly enough defense on that team. And then to make up for it, that's why you are playing guys like Vanderbilt and Finney-Smith more than you probably want to. There's a balance issue. I still do think that because of how good the LeBron and Luka can be, like on their best nights, I give the Lakers a slightly higher ceiling than the Warriors still. But again, that's everything needs to go right, and you need to have just gangbusters offensive nights from those guys to make up for how shallow and bad they are defensively. So you know, there's still flaws to both of these teams, but that was a hell of a game, a hell of a showing. It's still fucking must see TV when LeBron and Steph suit up, you know, against each other. And I just want to say one more thing. I need to admit that I was wrong. As has been said before, it takes a big man to admit his mistake. I'm that big man, yada, yada, yada. I was very, adamant all last year and even some of this year, you know, mainly before the Luka trade, you know, earlier in the year for the Lakers, that if Austin Reeves is your third best player, you're not in a good position. You can't win a championship. I'll admit that is no longer true. I'm wrong. Yeah, that is a wrong take. But in my defense, he's gotten better. Like this has really been his kind of breakout year. Like last year, he was like 15, 16 points per game. This year, he's solidly a 20 point per game player. I think he's gotten so much more comfortable being like a lead guy. He can handle it. He can run an offense. He can play off ball beautifully. Like last night, he hit so many sort of relocate, just, you know, get to that 3-point line in the corners. Luka will spray it out, or LeBron sprays it out to him. He lets go of it immediately, like quick release, just nothing but net. You know, he has off the dribble juice. Like he has gotten better. So I stand by what I said back then, you know, the last year and the year before, when he was sort of asked to play over his head. I thought he is way better than he was. He's not playing over his head anymore, and can be that second or third or even like leading guy when Luka doesn't have it or LeBron's not playing, whatever. So just want to get that out of the way. I no longer believe that is true. He is sick, and not only is, you know, can he be you know, the third best guy on a really good championship level team, but people are making the case, and I think there is a case for it, that he might be the best third fiddle in the league. Obviously still has those defensive issues, but for a like offensive guy who can do a little bit of playmaking, a little bit of scoring, shooting, you know, sort of three level scorer, he is gangbusters. So got to give him that respect.
Yeah. I don't think that, that tag is wrongfully placed by any means. One of the best undrafted players we've seen in quite a long time. He's, you know, we talked about the most improved race not long ago.
Honestly,
his stats aren't like actually all that much better than last year's comparatively. You know, he's up almost 5 points per game, but his assist numbers and rebounds are about the same. Shooting the ball at a slightly worse clip, but, you know, higher usage, I would assume, yep, on that one. And then a little bit better on the defensive end. But still, I mean, 5 points in one season is pretty awesome. Every year he's increased. So, you know, the sky's the limit for the 26-year-old right now. Shout out to all the white boys out there.
Yeah, white boy summer.
But talking about the Warriors a little bit here before we make our way into some rapid fire news, we got to talk about it because he's been politicking, Jordan. We know it as podcasters that you know, sometimes you got to push agendas, and he's pushed his way all the way to the favorite spot of the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. Draymond Green, he wants a second one. He's only got one, which is, you know, in his defense, he probably should
deserves
have,
more.
You know, one or two more, and he, you know, now he's going on that this is you know, probably his best last chance to win another Defensive Player of the Year award. And, you know, I think that this is kind of the case whenever Draymond's been in this conversation, that, like, he is a one-of-a-kind defender because, you know, he is not that big. I think a lot of people kind of forget that at times. You know, he's listed at, like, 6'6". He might even only be, like, 6'7". But he is so smart and so tough and physical that, you know, he matches up with centers. He is the starting center for the Warriors now. He is the he gets 90% of their minutes. Like, Quentin Post is the only other guy who is getting any, you know, big man minutes on this team. Kevon Looney, very, very few. But, like, and Trace Jackson Jr. is just out of the fucking lineup now. But Draymond Green, as the starting center of a, you know, potential title contender, you know, he's still averaging solid defensive numbers throughout the season. You know, we're right now, you know, he's averaging over a steal and a block per game. You know, always clamping up guys that are, again, he's in a mismatch with, at least physically. And then, you know, he's also, you know, able to go out, guard the perimeter on switches, yep, or, you know, when he is playing next to a traditional five. So I understand the case, but I don't really think that he is the Defensive Player of the Year. But on the other side of it, it's like, who would be then? Because, you know, Jaren Jackson, yep, Jr. solid, but, like, I don't know. Like, he gets blocks, but honestly, that's really all he does. He's not that great of a defensive glass cleaner or, you know, even just like a big-to-big guard. I think he's just a, you know, a solid, like, rim protector because he's so athletic and long. You know, obviously there's multiple people like Lou Dort, even SGA over on the Thunder that are getting consideration, but, you know, I don't think any of them really can say they're the Defensive Player of the Year because they have so many good defensive players and they're just a really good team defensively. And then, you know, you kind of look at like Rudy Gobert. I don't think anybody wants to see him, you know, get the all-timer Defensive Players of the Year awards. And, you know, that's really like the end of the conversation. Like, there's not really, like, Evan Mobley was in there for a while, but honestly, for anyone who's been watching a little bit of the Cavs basketball the last, you know, past few weeks, he's actually been kind of getting targeted recently in small ball sets. So I don't really think he's going to get it. I mean, Giannis is always in the conversation, but he's not really, like, you know, stood out defensively this year. Same with Bam. Like, it really could be anybody's this year. I think this is one of the weakest Defensive Player of the Year races ever. So like, yes, we said, Draymond probably should have won one or two more in his career at some point. So I'm cool with him winning it, I guess, but at the same time, it just feels a little weak.
Yeah,
this was also Wembanyama's award. This was Wembanyama's.
It was, yeah, this it was going to be
it's,
his.
It's very unfortunate.
Yes, 100%. And it's going to be his every year he's in the league until he starts to, you know, physically break down. Even then, he's so big, he'd probably still average like three plus blocks per game. Like, it was wrapped up for him. I think it was, you know, up to the point where he was going to be out, which was more than halfway through the season. Like, no one was even like considering anyone else because we all knew it was wrapped up. So I think that's part of it too. Like, if it was a more wide open race, maybe there would have been more Draymond consideration earlier on. And you know, if you look at it, like, Draymond's played, he's going to play enough games, kind of, he's pushing it though, cause he's only played 62 at this point. So, and there's only, you know, about a week or so, left of games, but he's just going to meet that 65 game mark. And like everything you said, I agree. Like, it does seem kind of weak and it does feel like for this award specifically, it's around this time when it is up in the air, it's whoever has a better sort of PR campaign. Like, Marcus Smart did the same thing. He really wanted it, really sort of pushed it again and again and again and got it. And then
a guard hasn't won it in 20 years or whatever the hell he was going on. Yeah. That's pretty much why he won it. He was like, oh, yeah, you know what? A guard hasn't won it in a long time. Same thing with Kawhi Leonard, only won one DPOY. And it was like, yeah. Oh, well, it's not just bigs. You know, why isn't this guy getting one? And he did deserve to win one, but.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, and Marcus Smart, like, it's not like he didn't have a case, but it does feel like it's so much about the narrative at this point.
And that playoff run, Drew Holiday ended up proving that he was the best defensive guard in the league. So then it just felt weird.
Yeah. And so I am worried that maybe will happen, with Draymond, but like you said, there's no one else I'm looking around at. And it's like, okay, well, he's clearly much better. Like I know Dyson Daniels, is going to have some,
I forgot about him.
The conversation, but again, I just looked up the Hawks fucking overall team defense. They're 18th for God's sake. And
fun fact. He's actually, when he's on the court, their defensive rating is worse.
Right, right. And I think there's, a lot that goes into that. And, that's not to say he hurts their team defense. He obviously makes it better. But, he doesn't have, a solid case. No one really does. And, I'm actually, for all the shit I talk about Draymond, I'm okay if it's close giving it to Draymond, who is going to go down as one of the most legendary defenders ever. Like, let's not, kid ourselves. Like, he held together the defense of a dynasty. Like without him, they don't win probably any offensively they were gangbusters and sort of can be without him. And Steph was going to be great no matter what, but defensively they would not have had the personnel that would have, allowed them to defend at the level that they had without Draymond.
Would have seen a whole lot more Zaza Pachulia.
Yes. Yes. And the fact that the Warriors are shooting up in the standing now, and like we just talked about, could be a top four team in the West. That really does bolster his case because they're seventh overall in the league defensively. And you look around and it's like, they played most of the year without Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy's been good on that end, but I don't think he's been like so locked down that it's like, oh, it's they've been so good defensively because they added Jimmy Butler. Like they've been good all year defensively by the numbers, and they don't really have any other, like I know Gary Payton the second's there and you've got other, you've got a fairly deep team that Steve Kerr can go to, and they're sort of connected defensively. Draymond Green is the reason they're connected defensively. He, like you said, he plays center, but he can also jump out on guys. He can switch in their scheme. He talks on that back line like fucking Kevin Garnett. He is just as comfortable guarding someone, who's got 4 inches on him as he is switching out and like he showed last night, stripping a guy like Luka, driving like I think we are sort of underrating how good Draymond Green is at this point because he's been sort of at that level for so long. But when you really think about it,
he's an asshole.
Yeah, well, and that as well. But when you really think about it, he still might be the most versatile defender in the league at 35. Yeah. Like
if not ever.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm actually fine giving it to him this year because, like you said, there's just I don't really, as much as this one feels kind of weak and weird, and this isn't like a, oh, this is a super standout Draymond defensive year. I think it's kind of run of the mill. But yeah, when you look around, no one else is really standing out to me either. If it's close like this, if he's in the conversation, he probably deserves to have at least two. So I'm actually cool to give it to him, as much as it pains me.
Well, to stay in the Western Conference, it's a very Western Conference heavy podcast today. I hope you guys are all enjoying that.
So much of the Eastern Conference doesn't matter at this point.
Yeah, it's a joke. Pathetic. Moving on here, we have to go back a little bit early here, so hit the rewind button. We're back over here on Wednesday night. It was a April Fool's Day to remember. Oh, pardon me, it was a Tuesday, actually. That was the April Fool's saying that. But there was a double overtime thriller that continued into Wednesday. That's the way I'm going to justify this, for me over here on the East Coast while watching this one. A crazy matchup, double overtime. The Timberwolves edge out the Nuggets 140-139. It was a crazy game, back and forth all night long. Jokic puts up the historic 60-point triple-double, 61 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. Took him 52 minutes to do it, but that's not important. We're not gonna dwell on that too hard. But still, an amazing performance from one of the best players of all time. Continuing to build upon that legacy. But there's two things I want to talk about. One, the Nuggets themselves. I won't lie to you, Jordan. I'm getting a little concerned. They've been very banged up down the stretch of the season. Recently, they had a close game against the Spurs, which they lost. But all five of their starting five were out of the lineup in that game. And that was the back to back after this crazy, guys are playing. Christian Brown had 53 minutes under his belt, which is kind of insane, even for a young legs like that. It was a good game. But then, we were kind of known here as prolific Westbrook haters, and we have to talk about the end sequence of this game. Timberwolves inbounding the ball. Westbrook gets a great steal. He goes all the way down the court, wide open layup, and he fucking muffs it. He just can't bury the layup. They go back down, they pass it into the corner, and he fouls Nickeil Alexander-Walker, who probably wasn't going to hit that shot.
He had it, to be honest. He had it a couple late in that game, but yeah, probably not.
I mean, that was like the game of his life. He had five threes, 26, 8, and 8 in that one. Again, in 44 minutes. But yeah, I think that you still would probably live and die by the Nickeil Alexander-Walker shot.
If you're better than sending him to the line.
But that's the thing. You foul him for three. Your team was only down one, your team was only up one. Pardon me. He hits two of the three, and that's ball game. Wraps up for the Nuggets. And then somebody chirped him in the crowd, and Westbrook got all up in their face, acting like it wasn't his fucking fault that they lost. Because yes, obviously the game of basketball is very back and forth. Again, this game was well past the 48 minutes of regular play. We branched all the way to the full extra 10 minutes into this one. But you can't lie and say that he didn't cost them this game. Again, a pivotal game against the Timberwolves, who have been red hot lately. They are really rising up the standings. They are looking like maybe they can be a bit of a dark horse contender in the West, like I had predicted coming into the year. We'll see if maybe they can make me not look like such a fool. But this is one that is tough. Like, you are going to lose a game in double overtime when Jokic is playing at the insane all-NBA level that he is, and you still can't eke out a win at home. Like, it's kind of a bad look. And again, coming into the season, like the end of the season, they just look a little tired. They look a little slow. I think that this season, we talk about his health and his fitness level and everything. And I do think that this is a tough situation for Jokic to be in, that he has had a shoulder. Such a heavy load all season long. My faith in Jamal Murray is shaky. My faith in Michael Porter Jr. is pretty much non-existent. I know they're third in the Western Conference right now. They're a half game above the Lakers. They are a game and a half above the Warriors. I could easily see them drop all the way to, the fifth seed. Maybe if the Memphis Grizzlies or the Timberwolves can really heat up here, they could even drop to six. Like, they don't have any room for error right now, and it just, to me, seems like, they're 4-6 in their last 10. They're on a two-game losing streak. It just seems to me like they're really slumping at the worst possible time of the season.
Yeah, and we've got Nuggets-Warriors tonight as we record this, so that'll be a really big game, obviously, for seeding as well. Warriors on the back-to-back here, but that's a tough one to lose, like that, because it's against Minnesota as well at home, like who you lost to last year. Like, it's just that one that you could tell they really wanted it. And at first glance, it's like you didn't have Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. In this one for the Nuggets, but the Wolves weren't playing with DiVincenzo or Naz Reid, so I think that pretty well evens it out. And you, like you said, you had a chance to win there. Russ came up with a huge steal. Not only did he miss the layup, he also could have dribbled that out. Like,
yeah,
that
exactly.
Time was running out. You had Christian Brown running with you. You could have maybe passed it to him. He could have dribbled it out. Anything you could have done would have been better than going in, missing the layup, and then letting the Wolves come down, the other side, and then obviously fouling the dumbest thing you could have done. Not only that, Russ also let, a few plays before, I think it might have been in the second overtime or in the first overtime, let Ant completely sneak backdoor on him. Someone found him, really close to the cup, and he went in and scored. Like, Russ is still just a bad defender. Like, I don't know. I want to be nice about it and say that he tries hard and he makes it look like he's trying hard defensively. He always had throughout his whole career. He sort of gets into people. And back when he was athletic, he could sometimes play all right on that end, but he's just always been like mentally just not a smart defender, not good, not super locked in. And like, we've seen that now at every stop sort of in this latter part of his career since he left the Thunder. It's like, not only does he take stupid shots a lot of the time and he's not really a threat from three, he just doesn't help you defensively. And he should more as like a vet in this league for 10 plus years. He really should be better and smarter on that end, but he just isn't. So that's just a really tough way to lose a game to a rival and, yeah, have it put so squarely, so clearly on Russell Westbrook's shoulders, a guy who, for all of his flaws, you fucking need. Like, you, that's the ironic thing, is you need him out there. You needed his 38 minutes in this game. Because
I still think he should be considered for Sixth Man of the Year this year. He's had a good honestly, season.
Yeah, and again, I will always give Russ credit. You can say what you want about him. He fucking plays. He has been available for most of his career. He just does not miss games. So, you know.
He cares. May take it a little overboard sometimes, but he cares.
Yes, and he cares 100%. But yeah, it's just really tough. And it's true. Like, you've got these other teams nipping at your fucking heels. Like, you've somehow, like, from the beginning of the season when they started out so badly and their bench looked so bad, have fought and clawed to the point where you are still in that third seed. If you end up here because you flub a game like this and maybe you lose to the Warriors tonight and, you know, you throw another a few other ones and you're down in like the fifth or sixth seed, that's really, really just a tough look. When you've put so many miles on Jokic this year, you haven't really been able to rest anyone. At this point, you've needed everything you could get from Jamal Murray this year, from MPJ, Christian Brown. Like, what more can you ask from a guy like stepping into that starting spot at fucking 18 and 12 rebounds in this one? Yeah. Didn't really shoot it well from three, but he's really stepped up. And you're just, I think Michael Malone has squeezed all the juice he can out of the orange that is this team. And there's just, I don't really know if they have a next level to get to. I mean, if you've got Nikola Jokic, the best player in the world, putting up a 60-point triple double and you lose, that's just not a good sign at all for the ceiling of this team. As much as I want to believe in them as well, and I'm not going to bet against Jokic, it's looking like this isn't going to be the year that the Nuggets make a deep run again. I think they clearly need to retool, re-outfit their bench, and figure out what they're willing to do to win another championship, because they've consistently each offseason let guys walk big parts of their championship teams just because they didn't want to pay them because they just couldn't do it financially. And it's like, you can't do that and expect to be able to get back to the mountaintop. It's looking rough.
They'll get Brucey B back this offseason on a vet man.
Yeah. That'll be great. Get Jeff Green as well. But it's just like, I can see it going a number of different ways, but to me, the most likely thing is a similar thing that happened last year, where maybe they win a first round series. And then, like you're saying, they look a bit tired. They get to the second round and maybe Jokic is heroic again. You've got Aaron Gordon doing his thing. He was great in this one as well. Big off the dribble threes.
I think you can argue he's their second best player sometimes. Like, Jamal Murray is solid, but like, I genuinely trust Aaron Gordon more than Jamal Murray.
And I think he's their second most important player. There's no argument for that because of what he means to them defensively. Like, when he's not out there 100%. On the defensive end, they are so god awful. Already, they're 21st in the league, defensively. Like, that's clearly still their weakness. But 100%. He's
best offensive chemistry with Jokic as well, I think, on the court.
Yeah. I mean, you can maybe still make the argument with Jamal Murray, but I think that they're right there neck and like the way that Jokic knows exactly where he's going to be and the way that he cuts is just amazing. But I can see them just hitting a wall again, physically and mentally. Just they're even shallower than they were last year. And the hope this year was that someone out of the blue was going to pop, whether that's like freaking Zeke Nagy or Peyton Watson was going to sort of take a step forward or some of these guys like Strother. I give Christian Brown credit for stepping in and really minimizing that KCP loss, which he's done. But again, that's just a net equal. Like that's not additive. That's just preventing a really steep drop off. You needed someone else to step up, and there just hasn't really been enough of that this year. And partly that's still Mike Malone sort of riding his starters. He's kind of got the Tibbs-itis over there. He doesn't really give guys as much of a chance, during the regular season to maybe give them those abilities to develop. But no one's really popped, and I can kind of clearly see the ceiling of this team because if you're gonna say Jokic can carry them, look at this game right here. Jokic had the game possibly what's going to be the best game of the entire season, and they lose, and that can obviously happen in the playoffs as well. So yeah, it's not looking good for them.
Well, looking over here at the status of the Timberwolves as an organization, former owner now, Glenn Taylor, has agreed to sell ownership of the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx over to Mark Lohr and A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez, for $1.5 billion. A light $1.5. One day we should just pull together.
Than the Celtics one.
Yeah, we'll pull together all of the money that we make off this podcast at the end of the year. We'll just buy the Raptors. Yeah. We'll turn this shit around. Bobby, you're out of here. Masai, smell you later. But yeah, this is a big sale. Very interesting to see how this will turn out. Again, we've been seeing with the Suns, with the Mavericks, where they bring in new ownership and crazy things happen and unfold. So I think that coming into next year, this offseason, the Minnesota Timberwolves are going to be a team to watch. I think there's going to be a lot of changes, a lot of moves that might come. And also, I think I mentioned this to you already off the air here, but Kevin Garnett, did not have a good relationship with the Minnesota Timberwolves front office. And now that it's going to be changed, it's a new culture, new faces in there. Maybe we'll finally see the big ticket get his jersey retired in his best city. I mean, obviously he won the chip and a DPOY there in Boston, but really his prime was played in Minnesota, the place that drafted him. He won his MVP. So hopefully we'll see his jersey retired within the next year or so there in Minnesota. But crazy news out there out of Minneapolis.
Yeah, yeah, and this has been such a weird ongoing thing now for like over a year, where they agreed to sell, and then Glenn Taylor's like, "No, actually, no, thank you. I'm gonna keep."
This is all the way back to 2021.
Yeah, right. Well, exactly. Yeah, I don't remember hearing anything like this, because like the Lori freaking A-Rod group's like, we've got the money. We literally have the money in escrow or whatever. But he just sort of went back on it, and so I'm glad. For the sake of the Wolves, that this is seemingly now past them and they can move on with this new group. We'll see what they want to do, because, I mean, a lot has happened when you look at when that sale was first initiated. Like, Anthony Edwards has, again, sort of been given the keys to this team. Cat is traded away. Cat is gone. Also, the Rudy Gobert deal. Like, how do they feel about that and his future on this team? A center who... doesn't have that much value offensively, and potentially might need to be pulled off the court in certain playoff matchups, who's making the amount of money that he is, are they going to be okay with that going forward? Do they want to put sort of a younger group around them? What are they going to do with Julius Randle as well? That's a big question at the end of the year. DiVincenzo as well. What's his future? Nikhil Alexander Walker. Like, there is a hell of a lot of questions, sort of when it comes to how this team is going to be outfitted and the money that sort of comes with that. And genuinely, like, maybe these guys believe in Jaden McDaniels as sort of this wing pairing with Anthony Edwards. But even then, like, I don't really think anything is, and obviously Naz Reid, the fan favorite. I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. But other than that, it's like, I could see any number of these guys being swapped out in the next year or two, like moving on. Like, there is no one who I feel like is untouchable out of those few guys after Ant, and possibly maybe even no one except Ant. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see the team building moving forward, because there's vets on this team who aren't going to be part of the future. Like, when you look at Randall, Gobert, and Conley, three big parts of this team right now. When you look at like the trajectory and the totality of Anthony Edwards' prime and career, those guys are going to be long gone. At the point when Ant's in his late 20s and still sort of able to win championships. So I'm sort of looking at the parallel between them and the Bucks, who we talked about recently, where Giannis was the best player on a team with sort of a core that was then older than him. How have they been able to transition out of that team to like a new team and a new structure that can still compete? Spoiler alert, not very well. So hopefully the Wolves have a better crack at it. I don't know how good A-Rod is at building basketball teams, but we will see.
Yeah, well, we will. We'll keep an eye on that. I mean, it's weird when a baseball guy gets into a basketball, you know, organization.
And also, why Minnesota? Does he have a connection to Minnesota? Like, I'm not really sure.
I don't think so, as far as I know. Maybe there is something there, but I mean, hey, I like the Timberwolves. Minnesota, you're close enough to being Canada.
Basically Canada.
You can be the 11th province. We're cool. We'll take North Dakota while we're at it as well. Yes. Moving on to our last segment of our quick fire news here that has been not really that quick, but we hope you've been enjoying it. But breaking news here that Carmelo Anthony has been elected first ballot Hall of Fame. Shout out to Melo. If you call LaMelo Ball Melo, kill yourself. It is Carmelo is Melo. Stay Melo. That one of the best slogans, OG hashtags there ever was. But Carmelo Anthony getting inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame here. Insane. It is actually kind of crazy to me that there was actual discourse when this was announced that people were saying that he didn't deserve to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Actually kind of fucking ridiculous. Because again, it's not the NBA Hall of Fame. First off, it is basketball contributions across the board of basketball. And even if it was the NBA Hall of Fame, Carmelo Anthony would be a first ballot Hall of Fame. You start off his fucking career. He goes to Syracuse and he wins the national championship in his freshman season. Wins the national championship. He's the most outstanding player in the Final Four. Was a second team All American, and then obviously ends up being the third overall pick there over to the Denver Nuggets. Should have been number two. Shout out to Darko Milicic. Crazy to see that. Think about what the Pistons would have been for those who forget. The Pistons were coming off of winning the NBA championship and had the second overall pick in the draft. And then he comes in and is just immediately, you know, a game changer in the NBA. Probably robbed of the Rookie of the Year that season. Should have won it over LeBron. He has a solid career there in Denver. Obviously, he goes to New York, which is like a lot of people probably associate Carmelo Anthony with. We talked about it last week in the last podcast. Pardon me, on Monday or Tuesday, depending on when you listen to it. Jordan asked me, top seasons with points per game in New York Knicks history or career points per game, and Carmelo Anthony was in there. He led the entire NBA in points per game one season. I think it was almost 30 points per game while he was there. And then, of course, I don't think that anybody can understate the fact that Carmelo Anthony is probably the greatest Olympic basketball player of all time. He's the all-time leader in USA points scored, and he's also a three-time gold medalist at the Olympics. Yep. He is the best American basketball player at the Olympics level ever, the Captain America for them. So he's got college success. Obviously, he had individual success in the NBA. He doesn't have a ring.
Some team success.
Yes, I mean, he got to the conference finals in the East with the Knicks, once with the West with the Nuggets. But I don't think that anyone needs to overreact to any shortcomings of winning a ring. He's still the number 10 scorer all time in NBA history, for God's sakes. That's a first ballot Hall of Famer into the Basketball Hall of Fame. No brainer. It is just crazy to me that people even were trying to say, oh, well, like, he doesn't deserve to get in first ballot. What does it even matter if it's first ballot or not? So what? He has to wait just because you don't think he's good enough to get in his first year? He's good enough to get in. It's not a debate. He is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it's not a debate. And I'm glad you pointed out that even without the separate from the NBA stuff, he would be an absolute no-brainer for first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, he is... I can't believe how underrated he's become now, because people saw sort of the bad twilight years of his career where teams didn't really want him. Obviously he played no defense, was kind of very limited in his effectiveness as an older player. But
it's because of these nerds, man, that are diving into all these defensive and analytics and all these efficiency scoring numbers. This guy was a baller. He was one of the biggest cultural basketball icons for a decade. He was so much more to the sport than people who weren't watching his prime understand.
Yes, 100%. And until Kevin Durant came along and took the title of most skilled big scorer or best scorer ever, do you know who was in that conversation before and most people would put there? It was Carmelo. Carmelo was 100%. Insane. We had actually never seen someone in the same way that LeBron came in and it was like, oh, we've never really seen someone like that. Carmelo came in and did that to scoring. In 2003, do you know how many people could go down on the block, turn over their right shoulder, jab step, one dribble, pull up, nothing but net at his size? There was no one who could do it. And the fact that he was you know, all stars for all those years in Denver, like you said, got to the conference finals, was in and amongst that group of like tough Western Conference teams. And he never had like, to his credit too, he never had like a crazy good running mate over there. Like they tried different guys, like with
old Allen Iverson.
Yeah. Same with Chauncey Billups, like after the Pistons runs.
Kmart.
Yeah. And you know, Marcus Camby was over there, but like no one who was like, oh shit, Carmelo had this amazing team and he really choked it in the playoffs and didn't make it as far as he should have. Like he always had decent teams, but like,
he went toe to toe with Kobe.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like all that. And then the thing that solidifies it as like one of the all time greats is he gets traded to New York, which is possibly and arguably the toughest market to play in, especially as a star. He thrived, like he absolutely thrived in that position that he was in that environment where you're scrutinized for everything that you do. Like, do you know how many guys have gone there and completely cracked under the pressure or like were not able to handle it? And sort of their numbers took a hit, their reputation took a hit. I think his reputation and his, the way people thought of him only was elevated when he went there. He brought them way more success than they'd had since Patrick Ewing, had some fairly deep playoff runs. And even in that scenario, even in that case, like they had this, you know, potentially this really great big three with, Carmelo, Amari and, Tyson Chandler. Then injuries kind of took, Amari out of the equation, and Tyson Chandler was dealing with stuff as well, sort of later on in his career. Like, again, there was never this, Melo never had like a super team. Melo never had these great, teams around him, where all he had to do was sort of take it home and be the scorer that he could be. And he had this great sort of defensive and, young talent around him. He was always,
he was injured for a lot of the Jeremy Lin, saga. Yeah. The Linsanity run.
And so like, honestly, I think Carmelo punched above his weight a lot of times in those New York seasons. And that season you're talking about, 2012-13, when he was led the league in scoring 28.7, which I know doesn't sound all that much now, but back then that's like scoring 33 a game now. Was third in MVP in that season. Like he was absolutely gangbusters, amazing. And again, that's with all the pressure. I think
they were the number two team in the conference that year too.
Yeah, they were great. Yeah. Right from the start, they were just awesome.
Young J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert just catching every fucking lob.
So sick. That freaking that series against Indiana was great. They had some great battles and if you're thinking about as a scorer, at the size, the skill that he had, the sort of hype that came with him when he moved over to New York, and the pleasingness to the eye. Like he's one of my favorite players just to go back and watch, with how effortlessly he was able to score the ball. And in the same way that people are like, oh yeah, Kevin Durant, he never really led his team to a championship. Like he got to the finals early with OKC, and then he joined the Warriors, and you know, do we really count that? He joined a fucking 73 win team. Like to me, it's sort of the same argument for Carmelo. It's like, sure, he never got all the way, led a team all the way to the promised land. And you can sort of pick holes in his case, as sort of when it comes to team success, but you can't pick holes in who he was as a scorer, as a guy who went out there, just got buckets, rebounder as well. And just sort of the effortlessness with how he played the game. To me, he's on that Durant level. So yeah, I don't want to hear anything disparaging, Carmelo. He's criminally underrated at this point.
Yeah, one of the best players of our childhoods, really 100%. Growing with the game. Carmelo was one of those OGs. So yeah, respect to Carmelo. I think I might have misspoke 10-time as well.
All-star, for God's sake.
Yeah, I don't know if I said it. He went to the conference finals with the Nuggets. I think I might have said he went to with the Knicks.
He lost that tough one with the
Paul George Pacers. Yeah. That was, again, great series, like you said. But I don't think he ended up making it there. But yeah. Great career. Shout out to Melo. Definitely well-deserved to break into there. I am hoping, and it's very unconventional, but I think that it's the right thing to do. People have been talking about this well before this as well. I just want to bring it up. Because him and Nikola Jokic both wore number 15 for the Nuggets. Jokic is the better Denver Nugget. I don't think anybody can argue that. He's got the MVP and a chip. Like, it's not close. Like, Jokic probably is also going to finish, like, I I think most people will probably say bet higher than Carmelo all time. But I do think it would be cool if they retired the number for both of them. They would have to wait till Jokic retires. Which will probably be, you know, who knows, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. I don't know. We'll see how long he really wants to play. I don't think it'll be an issue with his body. It'll be more so just how long he's interested in playing in the NBA, which is hilarious.
The horses are calling.
Statement. Yes. But yeah, I do think that he deserves that recognition. I think that the Knicks might retire his number. I think that's probably a toss-up. You know, he was only there for, what, like 4 or 5 seasons? So, like, I think it was 4. I don't know if they will. But, I mean, again, the 7 over there was iconic. So, it would be cool to see that jersey retired as well. But, you know, shout-out to Melo. He was a big dog. And that brings us to the big dog of the month of March. Get that fucking dog back in here, Jordan. Throw the ball.
Oh, yeah. Can Alex edit it around? Throw that audio. Come on, figure it out.
Yeah, and also this is going to come up late because producer Alex is in Peru, perusing all the fine food markets, I'm sure. Yeah. But before he gets dysentery, let's talk about big dog of the month, March. This is a good one, Jordan. A lot better contenders than there was for February. No disrespect to our big dog of the month of February, Jalen Durant, but there was a lot of good contenders for this one. A lot more big dog play on display. But we've decided to give it to someone. Again, I also love it. We had no repeat winners this year for Big Dog of the Month. We might still give one up for April. We'll find out. We'll see. Because we are going to also be giving out the Big Dog of the Year in April. So maybe we'll just wrap that into the end of year stats. But this one's going to a guy who he's won it before. He's won Big Dog of the Month before. Not this season, though. He led the league in double-doubles. He's also second in rebounds per game this season, or in the month of March. And he also led the league in effective boxouts, Jordan. Boxouts that led to rebounds. It's none other than Ivica Zubac from the Los Angeles Clippers, a fucking beast. He has been helping my bankroll mightily because I just keep taking him over 15.5 points and he hits it every single time.
Let's go.
What a beast. Love Zubac, love the game, and one of the biggest parts of this Clippers roster right now, and a big reason that they've had the success they've had. So shout out to the big dog of the month of January, Ivica Zubac.
Month of January, Matt. Get your head out of your ass. March.
What knows, man? This has been a long week.
it's been a long
time. I'm back in January. First quarter. We're still in January.
Yeah, same. Zubac, he is, it's just incredible. Like, just remembering the fact that he actually started out his career with the Lakers, and if they actually believed in him, he could still be there. Yeah. Like, how
be a perfect
fucking
fit.
Incredible would he be on that team? I would be tearing my hair out. Because
I think they traded him for a second round pick, too, or something nuts.
Yeah, whatever it was not worth it at all. It was just kind of a throwaway. Like, and you know, no one would have expected him to turn out the way that he has. But like,
yeah,
it's still just crazy that he was given up basically for nothing. And like we talked about Defensive Player of the Year, people are bringing up his name more recently because he has been incredible. Certainly the last couple months, like. As a rim protector and as a guy who's just sort of solid on that back line, because again, defensive rebounding is also part of defense, as we like to point out. And he's just one of the best sort of cleanup men in all of the league. He uses his big body effectively. Like he's grown so much as a post scorer. He's just been incredible. And, still only 27 years old, to have a couple of these awards now under his belt, he might be, he's one of the best big dogs of all time. I would say he's been in the running the last few years.
I think he's flirting with big dog of the year. He'll win it one of these years, if 100%. Not this year. He's definitely right a candidate. Time. Oh yeah. And I just looked it up, Jordan, for the fun of it. You'll know this is the weirdest trade of all time. And it's really funny.
I remember
funny
it being
how
weird, but I
been.
Totally forget. Yeah. Yeah.
So the Clippers traded Mike Muscala to the Lakers for Zubac and Michael Beasley, the GOAT.
Michael Beasley. Yes, yes. Wow.
And that was in 2019.
Incredible trade.
Crazy that Michael Beasley was still kicking around, was getting another NBA run back then. I don't think that he actually ended up playing for the Clippers after that.
No, I don't think so.
Also a heist. Michael Beasley's fucking sick. You know, we were talking about guys who were considered the best scorers for their size. Talk about Michael Beasley before Carmelo Anthony, man.
In high school and college, he was unbelievable. Never really and panned out in the NBA, but that's
one of the funniest. Yeah, one of the funniest fucking NBA players. Maybe not intentionally, but very funny to watch.
Yes.
Who is it? Anthony Tolliver. He's rubbing his knee, thinking it's his own knee,
and then he's like, "My bad."
Oh shit! Yeah. Shout out to Michael Beasley.
Something wrong. Big dog. With, like, know what? Your brain.
Yes.
If you don't know, you're not rubbing your own leg. I don't know what to tell you, but.
I think that we should, in honor of Michael Beasley, he should co-own this March Big Dog of the Month of 2025.
Yes.
I think it's only right. Congrats, Michael Beasley, posthumous Big Dog of the Month.
Yes.
And attached to your trade piece, Vika Zubac.
Yep.
But. Let us know who you guys had as your Big Dog of the Month. Was it Zubac? Was it somebody else? Let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk, X, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all you old heads out there. Help us help you. Give us a follow. Stay up to date with the podcast, and we will be back on Monday. Stay tuned. We got some March Madness this weekend, Jordan. Men's,
ooh,
women's.
There it is.
Monday we'll probably be previewing the final national championship games. You know, we gave our predictions on how that was going to go on Monday, so go check out that podcast and stay up to date with that. And we will be back after the weekend. And until then, this has been Big Dog Ball Talk. My dad, Jordan Flegel. And as my good friend Jordan always says,
it's all about the shoes, Matt, in life. Mm. Okay. It's on the court
the
as
day.
Well. You know, like they say, invest in good shoes and a good mattress because so much of your life, you're either sleeping or walking. I got new basketball shoes because guess the shoes that I've been wearing at basketball, when I got them and where.
New ones?
No. I mean the ones I've been playing with before I got these new ones.
Oh, yeah. Well, in my mind, I always picture you still wearing the 2013 Hyperdunks. I think we had the same ones. They were sick. The red and black. Shout out to Hyperdunks, man. Again, there's probably some people listening to this podcast that weren't in the Hyperdunk generation.
I would have got Hyperdunks.
Fucking,
I would have got
dude,
more Hyperdunks
so
if
sick.
They still existed. Love them.
I remember I sold a pair for like $100. I had the 2014s, red and yellow. They were so nice, man. I should have held on to those. But you were probably playing in just some straight up fucking New Balance running shoes like a fucking dad, like some grass stains on them.
100%. They were Nikes, but I got them in Washington on the Washington trip
in
2015 at
nice.
An outlet mall.
Yeah, classic.
They weren't even basketball shoes, but I got new Balances now. I'm trying out New Balance basketball shoes. They're the ones
really?
That look the most like Hyperdunks. So far, so good, though. So far, so good. They're bright,
nice.
Bright green and like yellow. Very, they're a statement piece.
Well, I like it, Jordan. I like the swagger. You're trying a new thing at new ages.
Yep.
I can appreciate that. You know, I used to be quite the sneakerhead. I don't have the bankroll for that anymore, so I've kind of opted out to not spending all. And that was also before everything went crazy and people were fucking, you know, StockX and GOAT and all
yes.
that shit. You know, I was just buying shoes because it was nice to have. I haven't bought a new pair of actual basketball shoes in so long because, again, I'm pretty much a scrub now. I only get to play during the summer when I go to outdoor courts. You know, but I'm wearing the last two pairs of Kobe's that I played in high school
yes.
until they break down. I'm wearing them until I fit literally have to get new ones. I shout out to an old teacher of ours, John Fernal. I remember he at a little intramural run we had, he blew through the side of a pair of shoes right before or right after he had just told us that he had been playing in them for 20 years, and then he blew through the side of them. So
that's why
I want these shoes to go out. I want to use every single part of them until the wheels fall off. That being said, I've been tempted to get a couple of the honest ones. They're nice looking joints.
Oh, they look nice.
And just a little tease for everybody. I've been looking into it. There might be Sarnia basketball. So who knows?
Ooh.
Maybe Maddie Ike will be returning to the court. We don't want to see it, but it might.